listening to The Ouachita Chronicles.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Ashley.
You know one of the things I really love about Arkansas?
What's that?
Well, I mean, it's called the natural state for a reason. And it's because we have so many gorgeous lakes and rivers, like some of the prettiest, cleanest water in the United States.
Not because it's all natural. No nudist colonies here.
Well, there might be a few. We might have to search those out for a future episode.
Future episode.
None that I'm aware of at the moment. Fast fact, Trey. Anyways, Arkansas is a terrific place to vacation. As I said, beautiful, beautiful waterways. And we are blessed to have Lake Ouachita, you know, no more than an hour's drive from where we're at here in Mena. And it is a major hotspot for a lot of Mena locals, but also out-of-state tourists to go every single summer and multiple times during the summer. I mean, it's nothing for people around here on a Friday afternoon to say, hey, I'm going to the lake for just a few hours, just to get away from it all. And Lake Ouachita is the cleanest lake in Arkansas, the clearest. I mean, just absolutely beautiful. So we're very lucky, as I said, to have such, you know, beautiful waterways near us. But the Ouachita Chronicles crew, we were pretty lucky because for this episode, we got to go record on location. And we went to Mountain Harbor at Lake Ouachita to interview Bill Barnes.
It was a really fun time. It was exciting to get out of the studio, hit the road, and enjoy the Ouachitas and go to a destination where we got to really see the natural splendor and just beauty of the lake and the surrounding topography.
Well, we chose Bill Barnes to be interviewed for the Ouachita Chronicles, not only because Mountain Harbor is, you know, close in location and is gorgeous, as we mentioned, but because Bill has himself given so much back to the tourism industry in Arkansas. I mean, he's won multiple tourism awards, and he has just taken that marina and from something that, as you'll hear in the episode, could have completely failed and turned it into one of the, if not the most successful inland marina in Arkansas, maybe in the United States. I don't want to get ahead of myself there, but oh, it's pretty fabulous. And we always like to visit with people who work in the tourism industry because, you know, that's kind of a passion of mine. But you know what? Any of our listeners, if you happen to be in the tourism industry yourself, maybe you have a vacation rental cabin, or maybe you just have a vacation home yourself and you need to get that furnished, you know where the best place to get everything you need for your vacation rental cabin is?
Oh, I know. That's Don's Easy Pay.
It is. It's Don's Easy Pay and Don's Home Store. So if you're needing to furnish your vacation rental or your getaway cabin or your little hunter's shack in the woods, Don's Easy Pay has got you covered.
From appliances to bedroom suite, living room furniture, outdoor furniture, TVs, radios, you want a computer in your hunting cabin, whatever it is that you want, you can get it at Don's Easy Pay.
You can. All right. So hey, let's not wait any longer. Let's meet today's guest, Mr. Bill Barnes. Welcome to this episode of the Ouachita Chronicles. I am your host, Ashley Smith, along with my co-host, Jerry.
Hello there.
Hello, Jerry. And we are coming to you on location. This is a first for the Ouachita Chronicles. We are on the road today, and we are in an amazingly gorgeous cabin at Mountain Harbor on Lake Ouachita. And our guest today is the owner of Mountain Harbor, Bill Barnes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
To both of you ladies, yes. And to the folks that I guess are going to be listening to this.
Yes, yeah, they will be. We've got some listeners where I up now. So, Bill, you've got a long, long history around here, and that's what we're here to talk about. Whenever you were very young, 6, 7 years old,
yes, ma'am.
Correct? Your father came down here on vacation. Is that right? You fill me in wherever I'm wrong.
Okay, now that's close.
Okay.
My mother was from Malvern.
Okay.
And my dad was from Oklahoma. They met at the University of Arkansas, where dad was studying to become a lawyer in 32. Got his degree in law. They got married. And then after dad graduated from law school in 33, decided real quickly during the Depression, as he was starving to death as a new lawyer, that he did not want to be a courtroom lawyer. The war started. Dad enlisted, and because of his law degree, they put him straight into officer training school. Dad's friend from Malvern, a gentleman named Caldwell Watson, went into the Army with Dad at the same time. The reason is because Caldwell married my mother's best friend. So that's how they all got together. Both men survived the war, came back out. Dad, learning he didn't want to be a lawyer, got a job in Casper, Wyoming as the legal man for a mineral rights leasing company. So he spent from right after the war through 54, for about working with this company on mineral rights, leases, and other stuff like that in Wyoming and Colorado and Montana. My mother was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis before I was born, and I'm not going to go into that except that Dad tried to take her back to Malvern as frequently as he could to spend time with her folks there, my grandparents. So Dad was on one of those trips. It was 1,000 miles from Denver to Malvern.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember we would get in the car and we probably weren't 20 miles out of town when I'd say, are we there yet? You know how that works.
As all children do, yes.
Oh, yeah. But he would drive straight through 1,000 miles and get Mom to Malvern. And that's how we came to Lake Washita. In 54, he was in Malvern and Caldwell invited him to go fishing on this lake that was filling outside of Hot Springs called Washita. It's interesting that I remember Mrs. Rutherford in the fourth grade at Ramble School in Hot Springs refused to call it Washita. It was OU Cheetah, and I corrected her at four, which didn't sit well.
I bet that went over
and
like a lead balloon.
So she stuck with OU Cheetah all of the time that I was in the fourth grade with Mrs. Rutherford. Caldwell told Dad they were out fishing. I was with them. They went out of Brady Mountain. The first two operations on the lake were Shangri-La and Brady Mountain, and Denby Point followed suit pretty quickly. Then Crystal Springs. Mountain Harbor was probably the fifth development of any significant kind on the lake. The Corps allowed some interim leases before the time the lake was filling and the time that they awarded the permanent leases, like to Mountain Harbor and Shangri-La and Brady Mountain. Lloyd Scott, who was a lumberman in Mount Ida, had an interim lease to the right of the launching ramp below the lodge at Mountain Harbor, where he was allowed to rent boats while the Corps awarded a permanent lease. So actually, Lloyd was here before Dad was here. So we were at Brady Mountain, and Caldwell said, Hal, they're still awarding leases. If you will apply for one, and if you get it, I'll run it for you. So Dad went back to Malvern, then went back to Denver, thought about it, talked to some friends of his in Denver and in Casper, and applied for the lease and was awarded the Joplin lease, which is here. Now, I honestly don't know whether Dad picked this spot or whether the Corps said, this is where you get to go. I think the Corps determined the site, I believe, but I'm not sure of that. So Dad was awarded the lease, 55, had to sign a 25-year with 25-year renewal and make a financial commitment to have X facilities built within, I think it was 2 or 3 years. So we started in 55 with 4 boat stalls, well, a dirt road. The Corps had paved the road in initially, and part of the promise was that they would maintain the road, but they ran out of funding, so the road went back to dirt pretty quickly after Dad got the lease. But we started with 4 boat stalls, 1 gas pump, and 100 fishing boats. And kind of an interesting sidebar to the fishing boats, Dad wanted to buy Duracraft boats, which were built in Monticello, Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
by the Ward family. Caldwell wanted Dad to buy Arkansas Travelers that were built in Malvern. So they agreed to disagree. Dad liked the Duracrafts better because they were a welded boat as opposed to a riveted boat. They bought 50 of each. We rented them. The lake was so popular. Fishing was so good that they would rent all 100 boats out on a given day, not every day. Some of the boats would start coming back in by noon with limits. They would de-rig and re-rig and re-rent them. And that was a big deal then. Boats were $2 a day.
Yeah.
So that was $4 for a day. And that was pretty cool. So that's how Dad got started. Caldwell worked with my dad and ran the operation for 2 years. And it was almost immediately in financial trouble. Dad was in Denver. Dad arranged with the SBA, Small Business Administration, for a loan, but a condition of the loan was that Dad move back to Arkansas. And Caldwell, a dear best friend, but Dad couldn't afford to pay Caldwell and have any money for living expenses himself because he had exhausted all of his financial resources in the place. So Caldwell went back to Malvern. It was a tough, tough thing for Dad because they were so close. And Dad took over Mountain Harbor in about 57. Our family moved in, actually technically in 55, because I was 7 years old. I remember getting out of school at Cherry Hill School in Denver, in Inglewood, getting on the school bus, riding up to the house, and a moving van was sitting there, and our car. And Mom said, when I got off the bus, go to the bathroom, get in the car. I still remember that. So I went in the bath, went to the house, went in the bathroom, got in the car, and we left for Arkansas. The afternoon that I got out of school, second grade. The part that broke my heart, I had a little pedal bulldozer, and there wasn't room on the moving truck. And I still remember as we drove away, that little pedal bulldozer was sitting in the front yard.
Aww.
It was awful. I was just heartbroken.
That's such a clear memory for you.
I mean, you know, and it's so interesting that long ago, but it's just clear as it could be.
And that bulldozer stands out. That broke your heart.
Oh, it does. It was yellow.
Uh-huh. You got to play on bulldozers later in life, though, it seems like.
Well, kind of.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that we came to Arkansas, and initially we lived, let's see, if I remember this correctly, we initially lived in Hot Springs in a rental house. The lodge was under construction. It was built in 57, 58. I would go hang out with the carpenters, some wonderful local folks, Martin Short, DeWitt Forga, who was also a game and fish. He became a game and fish officer. Just great people that put up with a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, not always well, but that's okay. But Dad would let me hang out with him. Then he bought an 8-by-28-foot trailer. Our lease allowed for a trailer park. Now, trailer park, 8-by-15, 8-by-18, you know, those were trailers back then.
Mm-hmm.
School buses that were converted. So Dad built 10 spots, and our trailer was on one of those spots, and that's where we lived as Dad built the lodge. I went to school in Hot Springs, 3rd, 4th, and half of the 5th grade. And then the lodge was finished, our house was finished, and so I started school in Mount Ida, 2nd half of the 5th grade. I went 5th and 6th in Mount Ida. So that's kind of an early evolution. The biggest single continually negative hindrance that Dad had to deal with was the dirt road. You know, people weren't going to drive nice cars over a dirt road. The fishing operation went very, very well. I started working, started washing dishes in the lodge on weekends in the evenings when I was 10. We had a 3-compartment sink. You know, you had the wash, the rinse, and the sanitize.
Mm-hmm.
And the sanitize had a boiler in it. No, the rinse had a little burner under it, so it would stay real, real hot. And I still remember, because there were little kids, you know, that would come for the weekend, and we were friends, and they would run by the kitchen door and bang on the door and say, "Hey, Bill, you want to come out and play?" Which, of course, I couldn't, you know, and I'll never forget how unfair that was. But, and I thought Dad was awful. So that was washing dishes when I was 10. Dad built the initial properties at Mountain Harbor, the restaurant in the lodge. Later, we learned, and this is my position, and he probably will not be happy with me up there, he built the wrong product mix. Now, Mr. Hunter at Shangri-La, who had been in the resort business, knew what he was doing. He built a relatively small restaurant and built rooms and cottages. Dad built a great big restaurant, lots of overhead, and 12 guest rooms. Well, one kitchenette unit, but that was supposed to be the manager's apartment. 11 guest rooms. Wrong product mix. Not enough customers. Way too much restaurant. So that really hampered us for a long time. Put us back into financial trouble 2 more times. The dirt road, the overhead of the operation, the debt service were all very negative at that point because there wasn't any water recreation like we know now. I mean, you had people that rented our fleet of fishing boats were 14-foot, what we called short side, 14-foot high side, and 16-foot. And we rented 10-horse and 15-horse motor. Virtually everybody showed up. Now, there were no bass boats. There was nothing like that. So they would show up with their motor and their gas tank and their fishing tackle and their tackle boxes. And the dadgum tackle boxes were built out of steel and weighed 1,000 pounds. I promise you they did. I started working at what was then called the boat dock when I was 14. And we would open at 4 in the morning. And there would be, literally, y'all, there would be cars from the unload platform all the way up the hill and out of sight, backed up in line, waiting to rent a boat. We hustled. The boats were kept on the bank, or in what we called the pond, which was between two gangplanks. And we would drag a boat out of the pond, the size boat they wanted, pull it up on the cleaning rack, which was a platform that was floating, tilt it up. One guy, one kid, would be on the inside of the boat. The other would hold it tilted up on its side. We would throw two or three buckets of water into the boat to wash the mud and dirt and worm dirt and that stuff out of it. Throw it back down, slide it over into what was called the working dock, tie it up in a slip, tight, then go up to the car and get the motor out and the gas tank out and carry them down, then go get the tackle, carry it down. And if the gentleman was pretty well-to-do, he would have a trolling motor, which means he also had a battery. So we would carry the trolling motor down and the battery down. We would rig the boat, put the boat cushions in, the paddles in, fill out the boat card, and collect $2.
Hey, Jerry, you know how I was mentioning that I really needed a new couch?
Mm-hmm.
Look at this one I found online.
I mean, that's great and all, but why are you looking for furniture online?
Well, because of the selection and the price. And
that's absolutely ridiculous. You have the same selection and better prices, and you can actually sit and experience the furniture you're going to get for your home at Don's Easy Pay.
Oh, yeah. Aren't they the one who's been family-owned and operated for like 40 years?
Yes, they are, and they offer all the brands you're going to find online. Like Ashley, GE, Whirlpool, Catnapper, Samsung, England Furniture, Speed Queen, and more. If you visit the store and it's not there for you to sit on, and experience, they can special order for you. You can have anything you want there, and the prices are going to really reflect in your pocketbook.
So, like, the same Ashley Furniture that I'm looking at online, I can get at Don's?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, what about delivery setup? Because, you know, shopping online, I get delivery.
Yeah, shopping online, then you've got your delivery fees, your shipping fees, taxes, yada, yada, yada. You go to Don's, you see the price tag, taxes included, delivery fee included, any financing options included in the price on the tag. No math.
Okay, well, what about other stuff? What if I don't just need a couch? What else do they have?
Oh my gosh, every major appliance for your washroom, your kitchen. They've even got game systems, vacuums, stuff for home and garden. If you need it for your house, you can go to Don's and get it. You can also go to Don's and get tires. I mean, really, anything that you need, you can get it at Don's.
Well, you know, I'm really hard on my appliances. What if something breaks?
Not to worry, because Don's does all of the appliance work on things that you buy from them. Things like washers, dryers, ranges, refrigerators, and freezers. So you buy it from them, it breaks, they're going to help you out with appliance repair.
Well, this place that I was shopping online, they had like financing options. Does Don's have that too?
Yes, absolutely. All right, so they've got the retail, like if you just buy it, they've got the price there. You can rent to own it, or you can do 180 days same as cash, or you can do 6 months same as cash for anything over $1,000. And all of that has the tax and delivery, everything included in the price.
So the price on the piece is the price that I would be paying.
Yeah, price on the piece is the price that you pay.
All right, so where all is Don's at? I mean, where do I go?
If you live in Arkansas, you're pretty much close to it. I mean, you've got one in Mena, Waldron, DeQueen, Broken Bow, Ida Bell, Poto, and they're also going to be doing this really cool new home store in Boonville.
So Don's home store in Boonville.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So can I find them online too?
Yeah. So you just get on Facebook and search Don's Easy Pay and then put in your location like Mena or Waldron, Ida Bell, or Boonville. And you can look at their Facebook page, give them a call, find their address, and just stop in and see what they can do for you.
So basically, if I need it for my home, Don's Easy Pay has it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, dude, let's go. Car. Shopping trip. Okay, so at this time, you're saying that there was, I mean, obviously the marina was doing better. You're talking about how many cars are coming in, you know, how many are leaving. What was the type of marketing in this time period? Where were people learning about Mountain Harbor? Was it word of mouth? Were you guys advertising in travel magazines? Or what was getting the word out there that this was a special place?
We didn't do much because we didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad didn't know how to do that. I remember when he produced our first brochure, and it was done in, well, the lodge was finished, so it had to be 58, 59, and he showed it to me. He was so proud because he had gotten Miss Arkansas to pose on the front cover. And now
that'll bring people to the lake, right?
Yeah. Now, she was in a pair of shorts and a shirt, not in a bathing suit, because they didn't do that back then.
Right.
And I don't remember, Dad had a friend that she was a friend of, is how that worked. And I don't remember who that was, but he was so proud of that brochure. We did that. There was no Arkansas tour guide at this point. I think there was an Oaklawn magazine that he advertised in. There was a magazine called Showtime, I think. It was a little short thin paperback that was a Hot Springs piece that he advertised in. We didn't do any radio or, of course, television was in its infancy. I still remember Dad was so proud of the, well, two things that Dad was proud of when he opened the lodge. In the lodge, back in the back third, that was kind of a lounge sitting area. And he showed me this new stuff called Naugahyde. And he was so proud because these couches and ottomans were made out of this new material that was supposed to be indestructible called Naugahyde, which was white and lasted really pretty well. The other thing is we had 12-inch black and white televisions in all the rooms, which was so cool. Now, they didn't pick anything up. I mean,
but they were there.
They were there.
They were there.
Finally, and I still remember, we finally were able to get one channel out of Little Rock. And I don't remember, I want to say it was 11, but I'm not sure. So we had one black and white TV channel, kind of, sort of, and we had Naugahyde furniture in the lodge. But, you know, I don't remember any real marketing efforts or conversation about marketing other than the brochure. I don't even remember whether we hired or whether there was a brochure service in existence at that point. I do know that it was extremely difficult to market in Hot Springs because the Chamber of Commerce, when Ouachita filled, and this is so interesting to me, viewed Lake Ouachita as an adversary.
Right. Draw people away from Bathhouse Row and everything and all the tourist attractions there.
So the president of the chamber directed their information ladies at the information center. You know, now it all came in via telephone or stopping by to never discuss or mention Lake Ouachita.
Not even an option. Nowhere near here. We don't know what you're talking about.
Some folks stayed at Mountain Harbor. They were telling me that when they went by the information office for information and they asked about Lake Ouachita, they were told that there were no facilities on Lake Ouachita.
And, just a little sneaky.
Well, it's like everything that evolves. There are lots of bumps in the road during infancy. One of the things that I remember so clearly, there was a horrible conflict between my father and Mr. Hunter that owned Shangri-La. They didn't like each other. They wouldn't speak to each other. Mr. Hunter threw me out of the... Now, we didn't have a swimming pool, so I'd sneak over to Shangri-La and swim in the pool. And Mr. Hunter, I still remember I was in the pool one day, and I was leaning against the edge of the pool, and all of a sudden, I just saw these two khaki legs in front of me. And I looked up, and it was Mr. Hunter, and he said, "Bill Barnes, you get out of that pool and go home." And he ran me off. Dad wouldn't let Shangri-La boats park in our dock. Mr. Hunter wouldn't let Mountain Harbor boats park at his dock. It was just nuts, and it accomplished nothing. So one of the things I'm so proud of now, to just kind of fast forward for a second, all of the resorts on Ouachita are all friends and neighbors. We get together a couple of times a year and just visit. Now, we don't talk specifically about business much, and we don't share pricing. But we do talk about the lake and the core and the state's marketing, you know, and stuff like that. And I served on Parks and Tourism Commission for 18 years, and so I was able to offer some insights into what the state was doing. I was able to take back to the commission new and fun and unique stuff that was going on Lake Ouachita. But back then, with Colonel Landis, who started Brady, and the Hunters that started Crystal, and I can't remember who started Denby Point. Ray Pascal was at Crystal Springs. They didn't work with each other. It was this highly competitive, very self-centered operation. And we grew very, very slowly. It was real hard. Dad recognized early on that he had built the wrong mix, but he couldn't borrow any money. Back about 1966, A banker friend in Fort Smith told Dad that if he could raise $50,000, he would loan him another $50,000 to build cottages. So that would have put me at about 13, 14 years old. We'd built a swimming pool in about 62 because we just had to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a swimming beach down below by the launching ramp where Lloyd Scott used to rent boats. And Dad raised the $50,000 through a friend from Wyoming, and we started building cottages. Dad wanted to build 8 units, so we had to build 8 units, 2 two-bedroom, 2-bath cottages, 2 two-bedroom apartments under the lodge, and a building, a fourplex building that had 1 one-room kitchenette and 1 adjoining bedroom that could be rented separately or together as a suite. And we had to build that for $100,000. And he did. We did. I still remember we owned 1 vehicle, and it was a 1964, maybe 62, 64 Chevrolet pickup truck. And I would go down to Fordyce to the plywood mill, and they would sell Dad sheets of 1-inch plywood, the culls that maybe had a spot delaminating or the corner wasn't cut square or it had a crush spot, for $1 a sheet. And I would buy those and bring them up in the truck, and I made a whole bunch of trips. So our units were originally pretty much built out of 1-inch plywood. And I helped plumb them, and I helped wire them. And I learned a lot about two-wire Romex and CPVC, which was the coolest, neatest thing in the world at that point. And we opened them, and it made a huge difference because people really liked those. So we cranked that back up in 68. I graduated from high school in 66. I was 2 years into the University of Arkansas. Even though we opened them in 68, Dad was in trouble again in 68. So I went 66, 67, 67, 68 to Fayetteville in business. And then I went back to school to Oklahoma State the next fall semester and took 20 hours of restaurant classes, hotel and restaurant classes, because I pretty much knew that I was not going to be able to finish college because at that point the IRS was coming out and visiting Dad, and I met him.
So did you know from the time that you started college that you were going to come back here? Was that your plan, or were you looking to break away from this and do something different?
When I was a freshman in college, I didn't want any part of coming back here. I was mad at Dad. All he did was make me work. We were in financial trouble all the time. Now, he did everything he could to make me happy and to provide for me. But, you know, he had to care for my mom, my little brother, and me, and work all the time. And, you know, you only have so much energy and so much time in a day. By the time I was finished with my freshman year, and I think it was probably more just growing up,
mm-hmm.
I knew that I wasn't going to leave my dad unless he decided to sell, which he was determined not to. So when I finished my second year in Fayetteville, I was frustrated with that. General business was helpful, but except for a little bit of the English and some of the basic math, you know, world history, all of that stuff, I couldn't bring that back to Mountain Harbor and make it make me better.
There was no hospitality involved in that general business, was there?
No, none at all. So that's when I found in a restaurant magazine that Oklahoma State was one of the top 5 hotel and restaurant schools in the country. I still remember that. So I enrolled over there, went the fall semester, came back and worked the spring semester here in the summer. And I had met a gentleman, and he told me about Forest Park College in St. Louis. And the director of that hotel and restaurant school was an OSU graduate, a fellow named Jack Miller. So I called Jack that summer and introduced myself and said, I just need hotel and restaurant training. I don't need anything else. I don't want anything else. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to go to school. What will you do? He was the most gracious gentleman. He waived all the prerequisites, let me come up. I took 18 hours, and I worked for his catering company in the evenings. So I just immersed myself for another semester in food and beverage and lodging, mostly food and beverage at that time. I still remember Forest Park College, which is on Lindell, was under construction. Brand new college. When we got there, it was not ready to be opened. So the first month of classes at Forest Park was in the kitchen of an abandoned hotel.
Wow.
That's still fun times. You'd go into this old, deep, dark, old building and down in this kitchen, you know, I mean, the stuff didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So we took a lot of theory at that point. Then they opened it, and the hospitality class served the students in the student union. We served special meals to like the board of directors, VIP groups, that kind of stuff. And then I worked for Jack in the evenings, and he served mostly Jewish events. So we served some magnificent food and beverage operations, just catered some beautiful meals. So I did that, learned at Christmas that the IRS was filing foreclosure on my dad. So I left school Christmas of 70, went to work full-time January of 71. And now I didn't know what I was doing, y'all. You know, I mean, I was scared to death. Didn't know anything other than I didn't know that I could get a job anywhere else and I wanted to stay at Mountain Harbor. So dad was exhausted. You know, you can only fight those battles so long.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my first meetings, I guess my first real meeting in January of 71 was in Hot Springs at the Federal Building with the Internal Revenue Service.
Oh, what a way to jump in.
Well, I called Mr. Anderson. Now, I knew him because I'd met him when they came out to talk to Dad, and there was another gentleman with him, Mr. Burnett, I think. And I just called and said, can I come in and talk to you? And I didn't have a clue where the Federal Building was. I was scared to death. They welcomed me. They put me at ease. I just told him, I said, I am back full time. If you will give me a chance, I will pay you. I don't know how, but I'll be at work every day. I'll answer the phone every day. I will talk to you and answer any question every day if you will just let me try. They waived all the interest. They waived all the penalties, all the interest. And they said, Bill, you tell us how long it will take you to pay us. But now you've got to pay the current stuff up to date. And I told them and I paid them. I wrote every creditor and said, if you will give me a chance, I will pay you. And some of them I paid $5 a week, but with the exception of two or three that were mean, everybody worked with me, and it took me 7 years to clear all the old stuff, but that's kind of how I came back full time, and that was 50 years ago, girls.
Doesn't seem like it, does it?
No. You know, most of my friends are retired, the ones that I grew up with. And every now and then they will say, well, Barnes, when are you going to retire? And I wake up, I love what I do. I love the people I serve. I love the people I work with. You know, most of the management team and I have been together 30 years or longer. Some of us 40 years.
Wow.
And it's just, I mean, we didn't know what we were doing together.
So you learned together.
We learned together. We screwed everything up a lot together.
Mm-hmm.
We really did, but we learned. And it's just, I am so thankful. You know, God put me at a place with a job that fits exactly with the way he wired me. I just love it. And people have asked me frequently, well, how did Mountain Harbor get its name? When we moved from Denver, because the Rocky Mountains were in our backyard, I kept asking Dad where Mount Ida was, because I was looking for Mount Ida.
That's got you tickled.
So he finally loaded me in the car, and we drove to Mount Ida. I was 7 years old. And I still remember breaking over the hill where the Forest Service office is now. And Dad said, okay, son, this is Mount Ida. Well, there's no mountain. I mean, you know, I expected something to just pop up out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to explain to me that Mount Ida didn't necessarily mean there was a mountain, and mountains that I was used to weren't anywhere around, and I needed to just suck it up and get used to it, because I was pretty disappointed. When Dad lived in Denver, the winters were so bad, people just didn't get out. So Dad built a 21-foot Chris Craft cruiser in our garage one winter. And, I mean, it was just a kit. I still remember the ribs and all that stuff. Anyway, when we moved, Dad brought the cruiser with us. And we were out on the lake. I was there with the folks that were Dad's and Mom's next door neighbors in Denver, the Button family, Frank and Jane Button. And they were sitting, we were sitting in the boat out in front of the launching ramp. You know, Hickory Nut Mountain, as you look toward the shore where the lodge would be, Hickory Nut's on your left. The launching ramp was right there. And Dad hadn't named the place. And because Hickory Nut Mountain sat there, you know, the biggest mountain we had around, and because of the little coves on both sides of the launching ramp, Jane said, Hal, you ought to call it Mountain Harbor because the mountain's right there. And these coves are perfect harbors. And that's how Mountain Harbor got its name, from Jane Button from Denver, Colorado, that was on Cloud 9, Dad's 21-foot cruiser, before anything was built. Anything. Before we had the fishing boats. We came out of Brady Mountain to motor up there just to look at the lease from the lake.
And it was named right there.
It was named right there. Mountain Harbor.
That is a terrific origin story for a name.
Isn't that cool?
Thank you for sharing that, Bill. I like that a lot.
I just, you know, while I've been talking with you all, just rattling.
That's what we're here for.
I needed to go back and do that.
So how about if it's lunchtime? What are we going to have from Wendy's?
You know, I really like Dave's Double for Lunch.
I really like their pub fries.
Yes, pub fries are delicious.
No, dude, the pub fries have a warm beer cheese sauce and applewood smoked bacon. Do you know what else they have the lockdown on?
What's that?
Rewards.
Rewards? I'm all about some rewards. Tell me.
You can download their app and you get 10 points for every dollar you spend at Wendy's. And right now, you get $3 off every mobile order over $15.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me you could have gotten breakfast for me with a 2-for-$4 deal. You could have gotten breakfast for the entire office with a 2-for-$4 deal, spent over $15 and then gotten $3 off and fed us all.
Jerry, it's that time. You're going to have to be an adult. You need to download the Wendy's app yourself.
Ugh. Well, it doesn't seem that difficult, so I guess this is my opportunity to start doing things for myself.
That's exactly what you should do, because with the Wendy's app, you can order online, you can view the menu, or you can just locate the Wendy's nearest you.
But can we have producer Trey pick it up for us?
We could have producer Trey pick it up, or they will actually deliver.
True.
Yeah, for sure.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So if you're like us and you love Wendy's and you need more in your life, make sure and visit the Wendy's location nearest you. Because remember, Wendy's is always fresh, always hot, and always satisfying. All right, so you've come back to Mountain Harbor 7 years in. You've paid off the creditors. You've started to get in your groove, finding your way of doing things, developing your staff, which is, I have heard you say on more than one occasion, that Mountain Harbor is not a success because of you. It is a success because of the people you work with and your guests, correct?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
My only claim to fame, Ashley, is that I have had the honor and pleasure to work with and serve the most wonderful people that God could have put into my life. And I mean that. I just, all the way back when I was just a kid and didn't have any money and didn't know what in the world I was doing, and some of Dad's friends would mentor me, not always kindly. We were so broke. We had four docks. They were rotten. The deck boards were rotten. They floated on old barrels that were rusty. It was just tough. Mm-hmm. And as I evolved, what I learned was, because boating was evolving, that we needed boat stalls. And boat stalls were cool because you got paid for a year and you had this real money that if you managed it right, maybe it would last. Plus, you had a customer that would eat in the dining room and buy gas. So there was a gentleman that was president of the bank in Mount Ida, John Beavers. Tough old banker. And I mean old banker. And he didn't talk, he snarled. And I was scared to death of him. John would loan me money. Dad had a diamond ring, and I took that diamond ring, and John would loan me money to build a few boat stalls. Of course, he kept the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year later, because I'd fill them, I'd go in, and I will have paid the note down a little in a year, and he would loan me the money to build a few more. And even over the objection of some of his other officers, because they didn't like Dad, a lot of the folks in this area were tragically mistreated by the Corps, and their land was really, even though officially it was purchased at fair market value, I really don't think it was. And a lot of people lost homesteads that had been in their family for years. So there was a very significant resentment for all of the people, the resorts on the lake, because they were Ferners that had come into the area. So some of the bank officers objected to it, but John, as long as I made the note payments and paid things down, he would loan me the money to build a few more. So that's how the marina evolved. Still, it was still a bunch of docks, and it was still the boat dock. But it evolved that way through, really, John Beaver's support of me when we had absolutely no creditworthiness at all. Mm-hmm. None. So that would occur, and Dad's customers, I still remember so well, Dad's first houseboat customers were Henry Ketcher, Ketcher Roofing in North Little Rock, Roy Splawn, who had the largest Mercury dealership in Arkansas, Mercury Motors, and Reeves, Harold Reeves. And so they had the first three boats down there. And Henry and Roy were both really good businessmen. Harold was military. So I would ask them questions, and they would mentor, and they would talk to me. And I would go to Brady Mountain and talk to, then it had been purchased by a gentleman named T.P. Jones. And T.P. owned Self Creek on Lake Greeson. And he sold Self Creek to buy Brady Mountain. And I would go hang out with T.P. and just follow him around like a little puppy dog and ask him questions. And he was just so kind to me. And he knew what he was doing. And he was a tough businessman. And I still remember the times that he would sit down and say, "Now, Billy, you can't do that that way." So he was wonderfully kind. So mentoring from Dad's friends, mentoring from T.P. Jones, and a little bit from Ray Pascal that had Crystal, and the staff, Knight Cashin, who had the Cashin Company in Little Rock, which was a big bonding insurance company, and Bob Wilson, who had Little Rock Road Machinery, which was a heavy equipment dealer. And they were close friends. And Jack Lynn, who had Park and Printing. And they all would come together. And Bill Bowen, who the Bowen School of Law is named after in Little Rock. Mm-hmm. They all came together a bunch. And they would work with me. "Now, Billy, this, and now, Billy, that." They paid me in advance for the boat stall, sometimes a couple of years ahead, because the deck was rotten, and my only promise was that I would spend as much money as I needed to put boards down on their decks so they could walk to their boats. We got hit by a storm one night. Now, you know, no cell phones, three TV channels, and it blew the two docks back into the back of the bay that are below the house where I live. And I was back there. We had maybe two employees at that point. I was back there tearing down the broken stuff and getting ready to try to float them back into place. And I get this call. The lodge called me and said, "You need to come up. Knight Cashin's on the phone." Well, I called him back. And he said, "What's going on over there?" And I told him. He said, "What are you doing?" And I told him. He said, "Okay." Hung up. About 2 hours later, Knight and Bob Wilson and Jack Lynn. Now, these were prominent Little Rock businessmen. They showed up in their khakis with hammers and handsaws and chainsaws, and they worked with me till after dark that night. I get goosebumps.
I have goosebumps at the moment. So
just to help me get those docks back in place, because, you know, they were all we had. Those were the only docks we had.
And that was your livelihood, right?
And
there,
it was. And they didn't have boats in those slips.
Right.
They worked with me. I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, and they did. And they worked. And now you go to the staff side.
Now, I don't want to make you blush or in any way, but you always throw it back to your staff and to your customers. But I have to say, from the story that you just told me, that those businessmen who knew what they were doing and knew you didn't know what you were doing, they had to have seen something very special in you to put out that type of effort and to mentor you like that. So I know you're humble, but it seems like you've lived an amazing life and made a big impression on a lot of people.
I think you're being far kinder than you need to be.
Oh, not me.
Yeah, you. They were friends. They were friends of my dad's. I could tell stories like that. Actually, I could tell them all day about people that helped me one way or another. But when you go to the staff side, in the winter, it was Dad and John Brown and me. I mean, there were no customers. We were open. The restaurant was open, which was never smart. And we started closing in the winter probably 25 years ago now, but we just flowed red ink, and we were broke anyway. But Colleen Helms, who is our comptroller, started 41 years ago with me as a server. And as we evolved and grew a little, and then John Brown worked with me, John and I painted, scraped, hauled rock, you know, pine knots to keep the fire going because we heated the lodge with a fireplace and whatever else Dad needed us to do. One day, Patty Brown came in. It was dead of winter, and she was John's wife and was the assistant to an insurance agent in Hot Springs. And she said, I want to go to work at Mountain Harbor. And I said, no way. I couldn't touch your salary, and we don't have any money to pay you anything. So, no, I'll work for half. I said, Patty, there is no business. There is nothing for you to do. I'll clean rooms. I'll scrub windows. No, I can't afford you. Come back in the spring. We'll talk about it. She came back in the spring. I hired her at front desk, now called reception. And that was 39 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
And Colleen and I, that we were the books. And she was a lot smarter than I was. The creditors would call. And she would handle the calls until she was crying. And then I would handle the calls until I was so mad I didn't want to handle calls anymore. So we literally alternated all winter because we couldn't pay any bills. I mean, we just couldn't. Patty and I would sit. We would close the lodge. I'd open the boat dock and close the lodge. And we would sit and dream. And I'm not exaggerating, y'all. There were now not a lot of them, but there were times when we didn't have any money to buy food because lodge was open. We would go in and get stuff off the shelves in the kitchen. Rice, beans, canned tomatoes, onions out of the refrigerator. And that's, we would take that home, she to her house, to mine, and that's what we'd eat. But it just, I don't want the folks listening to this to think it was this all hardship thing, because all of the customers, they were such a pleasure to serve, with very few exceptions. The staff, we did all we could do every day. And you would wrap up the end of the day, most days, and able to look back and be proud of what you did. Something that I've shared with other folks that have started businesses and had some real difficult times, and I've admonished them to think about this. And it works for everybody, I think. I don't think anybody is smart enough to start a small business and immediately open and immediately be happy with everything and successful with everything. You know, whether it's the radio business or the resort business. But I tell them, you know, at the end of the year or at the end of 6 months, if you are just beaten down and wonder what you've done, stop for a minute and accurately and fairly look back at where you were 6 minutes or 6 months before or a year before. And every year, every 6 months, you will find things that are better than they were then. In our worst years, when it was just awful, when I didn't know how I was going to pay the bills, when I made myself quit feeling sorry for myself and look back 6 months or a year, we were always better. There were always accomplishments. And that always reinforced my confidence that I could make it work. And that made a big difference to me. It really did over the years. So, you know, we went in 1958, 57 from 4 boat stalls, 1 gas pump, and 100 fishing boats, of which we still have 6.
Oh, my.
Wow.
You know, we sold most of them off for money to pay the electric bill. We still have 6 that I just refused to sell. And so over the years, as we've evolved, you know, we're now at 900 acres, 1,500 stalls, a wonderful crew. You know, the staff, they are Mountain Harbor. The crew, the staff, the wonderful people I work with. I mean, Colleen, 41 years. Patty, 39 years. Ashley, who came from Self Creek, about, I think, 10 years now. David and Vicky at Iron Mountain that operate that, 43 years. Jim Mishler, who runs Self Creek, and Kelly, his daughter, and Lori, his wife. Jim and I have worked together 29 years. Todd Gadberry, our harbor master here, over 30 years. Vivian, who runs maintenance. Quick story about Vivian.
Okay.
Vivian Green. She was hired in maintenance for general maintenance back 29 years ago. And I said, there is no way a woman can do that job because there's a lot of really heavy toting, you know. And while I watched her pull up to the swimming pool, go around to the back of the pickup, throw a 100-pound bag of diatomaceous earth on her shoulder and carry it over to the swimming pool filter room, didn't say another word after that. And Vivian runs all the maintenance operation. Patty Brown's son, John, who is Chris, my son's age, 45, is assistant maintenance manager. Chris, my son, runs food and beverage. Daughter Stephanie handles all the marketing and communications, which I don't profess to understand very much of anymore. If that staff hadn't stayed with me through all those years, many, many times when I couldn't make payroll, times when we literally ate whatever was in the kitchen at the lodge, if they hadn't stayed with me, if those customers hadn't mentored me over all these years, and friends, you know, I wouldn't be here right now. You know, I'll never retire. I love every minute that I'm here. I do kind of want to come and go more like I want to, but God has blessed me more than I can ever express to allow me to be here and do this and serve these wonderful people and work with these wonderful people. They're my family.
It's obvious that you love what you do. It exudes from mm-hmm. you. It really does. And we are very grateful and thankful yes. that you've been able to share these stories with us. That's been the highlight of probably the last few weeks, I yes. think, hasn't it, Cherry?
Absolutely.
We've greatly enjoyed ourselves. We're going to do our lightning round really quick, Bill. And our lightning round is just a wrap up. It's nothing really to do with anything about what we've been talking about, but we like to throw quick questions out at people and they just give us their gut reaction and it kind of wraps it up nicely.
Okay.
So... What did you want to be when you grew up?
A lawyer, like my dad.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
The ability to fly.
What's your favorite color?
Blue, navy.
Dog or cat person?
Oh, dogs. Absolutely. I have two rescue golden retrievers. We had German Shepherds when we were kids, growing up here. And I've had 30 years with 29 years of golden retrievers.
Harbor dogs, right?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Had Sam Dog for 14 uh-huh. years, then had Harbor Dog mm-hmm. for 14 and a half. Wasn't going to do another one because Harbor was my best friend and my heart was just broken.
Mm-hmm.
Then I met who are now called Port and Starboard. One half Australian Shepherd, half Golden, 9 years old, and 1 6-year-old Golden that lived in a house in Hot Springs and needed to be rescued. So Merle and I adopted them, and they are now a very integral part of our hearts, our lives, and our family.
All right, I'm going to throw one last question at you, and then we'll finish. If you could plan a dinner party or just an evening sitting on the deck with three people, dead or alive, who would you choose?
Oh, wow. My first question would be, do I have to limit it to three?
Well, for the sake of time, but if you got five you want to shoot right off, then we can do that too.
See, I would love to have dinner with my dad's first partner, Caldwell.
Okay.
I would love for him to be here. His son, Danny, who we've been friends since we were four, and his wife live here now.
Okay.
They retired here from California from the computer business. But I'd want Caldwell there. I would want T.P. Jones that mentored me at Brady Mountain. And I think probably I would want Knight Cashin that stuck with me, and Henry Ketcher. I want four. And Henry Ketcher, who stuck with me through some really, really bad years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the group that comes to mind first.
I like that.
I could put together mm-hmm. two or three other dinner parties pretty quickly.
I bet you could. Well, Bill, thank you so yes, very much for your time today. We greatly appreciate it. This has been a very interesting mm-hmm. interview, and I'm excited to get this published and for people to hear this story.
Well, I just want to say I am very, very flattered that you would ask me to do this. No, I really am.
Really?
And yes,
okay.
I am. Doing something like this actually brings back so many memories that I don't think about a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the history of Harbor is, that was a long time ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just for y'all to come over, for you to take all the time to come over and set up and sit here with me and put up with me for an hour. I'm extremely flattered. And I thank you all very much. I also just want to thank you for all you do in MENA.
Well, thank
you.
You
know, communication. Communication is so critical in our world,
mm-hmm.
and especially when you've got a wonderful entrepreneurial spirit like you all have exhibited.
Mm-hmm.
So just thanks for being small business operators in MENA, Arkansas, very much.
Well, we have to give a big shout out to Jay Bunyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do. Jay is really, really good to us, and he gives us that opportunity and gives us the reins to take it and run with it mm-hmm. like we are with this. We have a lot of fun with our jobs, mm-hmm. just like you do with yours.
Yes.
Jay is a good friend.
Yes.
You know, we served together on Parks and Tourism together, and
mm-hmm.
we were emailing back and forth a couple of days ago. But thank you all for being over there and doing the things you do for the people in our area.
It's time for that portion of the show we like to call Fast Facts with
Producer Trey!
Today's guest, Bill Barnes, another one of our extremely knowledgeable guests in their field. And Bill was such an amazing storyteller. So there wasn't too many things that came up that we felt like we truly needed to fast fact because, you know, Bill knew the history of Mountain Harbor, knew a ton about Lake Washita, and man, like I said, great storyteller. I really thoroughly enjoyed this interview. But we asked Trey to give us some fast facts about Lake Washita specifically. So what did you come up with, producer Trey?
So in my research, I saw that Lake Washita was actually a reservoir that was made when the United States Army Corps of Engineers built the Blakely Mountain Dam. They built it for hydroelectric purposes, for conservation. They built it for recreation. And the construction of the dam lasted from 1948 to 1953. And the thing is pretty big. Across it spans over 62 square miles, and it's 200 feet deep at its deepest point.
Wow.
Approximately, yeah. Wow. That is.
I know that they do a lot of, like, scuba dive training in Lake Washita. There's just a couple lakes in Arkansas that do that, and Lake Washita is one where people will go and do scuba diving, whether they're just learning it, you know, because they're going on vacation, or they already are certified scuba. You know, there's a lot of really cool things to see in Lake Washita. I feel like there might be, like, a plane that's sunk down there. I could be wrong here.
A plane?
Yeah. Like, you know, there was like a plane crash, I think. And there's, maybe it's a school bus. There's something.
A school bus?
Yes.
Full of children?
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. Because as I mentioned earlier in the episode, Lake Washita is one of the cleanest lakes. So the visibility is still really good pretty far down. And you're not going to find that in, you know, most lakes, honestly. Most lakes are pretty murky. Most lakes, I don't want to go swimming in. I don't want to even put my feet off the boat. Lake Washita is a completely different story. Like, I love it, and I will swim in it anytime. Sounds like a Washita Chronicles vacation.
Ooh, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. So, as always, thank you for listening to the Washita Chronicles, brought to you by Don's Easy Pay and Don's Home Store. You can find us, along with other great shows, at thewashitapodcast.com. Contact us at thewashitapodcast@gmail.com, and make sure you find us on Facebook and Instagram and give us a like. Until next time, Ashley and Jerry,
out. Thank you for listening to the Washita Chronicles.